You're listening to Birth Babies
and Busy Moms.
I'm Kia.
And I'm Dana.
We're two busy, sleep-deprived moms discussing different stages of motherhood,
providing personal experiences and guest speakers to empower and educate mothers around the world,
helping and supporting them to make informed decisions and to let you know
you're not alone. I know. And welcome to episode one, part one,
where we dive into Dana's story of pregnancy, birth, postpartum, and everything in between.
I'm Dana, your co-host, and I'm just going to do a quick introduction of ourselves before we get started with this awesome episode. I have two little girls. One is four and another one is a year and a half, slightly older.
I'm your co-host, Kia, and I have a little boy who's 3 and a half, and then I also have a daughter who is one, and we just moved to Ottawa, where we actually just met Dana and her family.
And we're part of like this amazing group called Barhaven Baby Moms. Just so awesome because we're able to connect with so many other people in the same walk of life as us. They have kids the exact same age as our youngest. And that's how we met, through that group.
Through that group, yeah.
Yeah. I think I was telling you this before, but a lot of my friends didn't have babies when I had my first daughter. So it was just harder to connect with them. They didn't understand what I was going through. And especially add the layer of trauma on top of that. It was so hard to relate with anyone.
Well, that's what nobody talks about. No one talks about how pregnancy isn't just you have a bad birth or a good birth. You don't just have a C-section or a vaginal birth. There's not just two options. It's not black and white. There's so many different multifaceted levels of birth, right? Even pregnancy. Good pregnancies, it's like hard for them to grasp, I think, what people go through.
Yeah, and either way though, when you're pregnant, whether you give birth or not, but your whole life has changed the minute that you find out you're pregnant. Then you give birth and then your whole life changes all over again.
Yeah.
So it's just like there's so many different changes happening. And then when you add trauma on top of it, which obviously you have been through it because yes. I know your story, parts of yes. it, and you know mine. It's just, it's a struggle, right? It's that added layer of the difficulties that you're going to face.
And the thing is, nobody talks about it.
No.
There's no resources on it. Trust your doctor. And you end up with issues upon issues upon issues, right? And like, especially with your situation.
Yeah, different methods. I knew nothing about forceps. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
It's very archaic, first of all. It didn't cross my mind when I was thinking about giving birth. I just thought, you know, C-section was a possibility if there was complications. I didn't think, oh, if there's other complications, there's other methods.
When you think complications, you just think it might go bad. You don't truly think about
what the complication is.
Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
You're not educated by your doctor either.
No, and you know what? Well, this is partly my fault, but I didn't do any research either.
But I feel like you have that like good faith and my doctor is going to tell me what I need to know. Well, that's what most women, in the very first pregnancy at least too, because I was the same way. I was like, I'm going to trust my doctor. He's the specialist. He's the one that knows everything. Like I didn't go to school for all these years to birth people. So you're trusting them.
Was it an OBGYN?
Yes.
So you trust them. Yeah,
100%. And it's horrible too. And like, I don't know if this was your situation, but we have different OBs. Your OB that you had throughout your pregnancy deliver your baby?
No.
Okay, that's the same thing with me. Whereas they don't really tell you that in the beginning. I mean, they kind of like mention it. That obviously causes even more trauma because you don't have a relationship with this person. Blindly trusting this person. And you're hoping that they deliver because when you go for your 6-week follow-up, you're not going to be having that doctor. You're going to be having your one that followed you in pregnancy.
So my OB didn't deliver my birth daughter, but in the hospital, the doctor that was assigned to me, I was supposed to do the follow-up with that doctor. I was supposed to schedule an appointment with
really?
That same doctor.
So both doctors that delivered my kids, I didn't ever see them again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a little different, I guess, but regardless, it's still so traumatic.
Yeah, and it's hard to have the continuity of care.
Yes.
Right? Like it's different. Every OB provides different type of care. You're not getting like the same level all across the board, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's true. But so, then for your second, you didn't have an OB.
No, I had a midwife. If anyone can get a midwife, I don't know how it works in Ontario. Like I said, I gave birth in Alberta. It honestly changed my life. It helped me heal from the
you have
trauma
said that before,
I had.
Yes.
And people thought I was crazy because a lot of my friends, they know obviously my birth story and how traumatic it was. They were shocked when I told them I wanted another baby.
Yeah, they were like, why? Probably. How?
Well, yeah. Right? And even the doctors, they were just like, there's a lot of issues that you have. If you do have another baby, you should go for a C-section. And I told the doctor, well, I don't want a C-section because there's going to be issues You never know what's going to happen there, right? More complications probably, yeah. There could be more complications, and I already had issues.
Yeah.
So I took a gamble, and I went with a midwife against Dr. Wishes because they thought I should go with OB all throughout. And I was so fortunate because my midwife is amazing, and she accepted me on. And yeah, just giving birth, it was – have you ever heard of orgasmic births?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I had one.
That's amazing.
Really? I know. Yes. First one was so traumatic and the second one was so good.
But
and
see, that's what gives people, I think, hearing your story, they'll be like, wow, okay, maybe if I had a bad experience, maybe my second one doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
You know?
And it doesn't. Everyone thought I was crazy, but I thought it couldn't get worse than what I went through.
So did you start with your, like, you know how with an OB you start at 10 weeks or whatever, 12 weeks? Did you start early with a midwife?
So an OB in Alberta, no, I didn't get an OB until I think 35 weeks.
Who followed your care?
Yeah, so supposed to be your doctor. I didn't have a doctor. I went to a health clinic and they followed me until I do believe it was 35 weeks. Then they switched me to an OB. And then I gave birth at 37 weeks. So I only saw an OB twice.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I didn't go through. I don't know. Did you have birth plan? Is that like a normal thing an OB does?
Okay, so I had a birth plan, but with my second. With my first, I didn't because I didn't know what it was. Yeah, like I wasn't told anything about it.
Yes.
They tell you, do you want to breastfeed? Do you have any positions you want? Do you want to pay for a hospital bed? Or do you want to go into like a ward with a bunch of other people?
Interesting.
That's what they kind of say is like a birth plan was.
Hmm.
Your midwife probably opened so many doors.
Yes. She told me about birth plans, which is awesome. And it feels like you're empowered. Yeah. Making these decisions.
You're in control.
I'm in control, which it should be. Zero control over my first child and the birth, which it shouldn't be like that.
No, it shouldn't.
You know, as women, we should have control over what is happening to our bodies and when it's happening. If there are common complications that can happen, I do believe that we need to be informed before we make a choice.
Yes, and informed before the situation arises.
Exactly.
And I think, too, a lot of times people aren't educated because they just trust system.
Yeah.
You have no time to think about it.
No.
You have no resources other than the doctor. Like my OB that I had throughout my pregnancy was very great but never delivered. So your midwife delivered, right?
Yeah, she delivered.
Yeah. So did you guys have a team or was it just...
And I also had a doula. Just that extra support, and she specialized in supporting women through pregnancy as well as giving birth.
So wait, for a doula in Alberta, do you pay for it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so did you pay for it all through pregnancy and after birth or just until birth?
So it's like a package. I'm sure every doula is different, but the way mine worked, I think it was you pay a certain amount of money for like the first 3 months or whatever it is. And then if the pregnancy continues, then you pay the additional fee sort of thing. And then after you give birth, she did check into.
She
was helping with latching, with breastfeeding. She would help giving assistance with some sleep techniques because we all know a lot of us struggle with sleep. I still do, unfortunately. So having a team, that was my team. It was a doula, a midwife.
Was it always them that you seen or was there like a tag team kind of situation?
No, it was always just them.
That's what I feel like it should be. Just one provider. And I get it, like, maybe have, like, a second backup, whatever happens. But, like, having that person that you gain the trust with in that 9 months that you're carrying a child.
Yes.
That's who you should be trusting. Because they're going to be the ones to know you best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they know your wishes. They know what you don't want.
Yes, yes, literally. What you're like, absolutely not.
Yep. And so with my doula, when we were talking about birth wishes and that sort of thing, so I told her about my past experience because that was for my second daughter.
That's
when
so
I had such a good team. I informed them about my trauma that I went through. And, you know, they were very empathetic and understanding. And they were never pushing anything on me.
That's
it was
good,
always
though.
Letting me be in control
of
the situation. And anyone can go that route. I definitely recommend it. I wish I knew the things I knew now before I went through all the traumatic experiences.
So did you know about midwives before when you had your first pregnancy?
I heard of them, but I didn't know what they did.
Yeah, let's get into your first pregnancy.
The pregnancy itself was very difficult. I was getting a kidney infection, so I went to the hospital. I spent the night there. It was just a night, but they had to do the intravenous antibiotics.
But when you're hospitalized when you're pregnant, it's different when you're hospitalized when you're not pregnant. It's like so much more intense, in my opinion.
I've never been hospitalized.
Oh, you've never been hospitalized prior? Okay.
This is the first time I had to spend a night in the
hospital. Well, that's even more traumatic, though.
Yeah, but you know what? It wasn't even traumatic. It was just a little bit intimidating, I guess.
Okay.
I wasn't really concerned at that point. They said, you know, everything looked fine with the baby and everything like that. it was more just an experience in itself. And it hurt, right? Yes, like it was a very uncomfortable thing.
Yeah.
So I had the kidney infection early on, and then I was just so nauseous constantly. And when you think about pregnancy, I thought, you know, you're sick for the first 3 months.
Morning sickness, you think happens in the morning. Yes, it's all day, every day, yes.
See, why do people not clarify these things?
Yes,
because
I know.
I was nauseous constantly my whole pregnancy.
And then you start thinking, is there something wrong with me?
Well, I didn't think something was wrong, but I was like, this is weird. No one told me this could happen.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And maybe it's because I went to doctors and they gave me the, I don't even know what it's called now, the pills.
I know what you're talking about, like the B6 and something else.
Yes. So I took those. They did sort of help. Near the end of the pregnancy is when I started getting more complications. So I had low iron, but they just made me take iron pills at that point. Like I didn't have to go for infusions. Anything. Yeah, they did nothing. It didn't affect anything. But I was anemic the whole pregnancy with that one. So near the end, I was still working. And I don't know if it was the stress or if I got a viral illness or what happened. But I ended up getting Bell's palsy.
I've heard of that in pregnancy.
So, I've never heard of Bell's palsy.
Okay.
So I'll tell you the story of how it came on. I was just going about my day. Then my face, it started tingling and it started drooping.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah. I thought I was having a stroke.
Yeah.
And
especially being pregnant super far along, you're like, what is going on?
Yes. Yeah. I think I was about 7-8 months at the time. I thought I was having a stroke because I heard that can happen to pregnant women.
Yes.
Right? So I go to my partner. I'm like, I'm having a stroke. Something's wrong. And he's just so nonchalant. Oh, you're fine. No, that's normal. And my face, if I have photos, I'm going
to
show you them later. But my eyes started drooping. Like my lip was drooping.
Could you see out of your eye?
It was blurry.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was weird. But he just thought, you're talking normally. You're not having a stroke. You can answer questions. And I was. Right?
Yes.
It was just the facial thing. But I've never heard of this. So I waited. I talked to my parents, actually. My parents said, okay, you need to get to the hospital. That's not okay.
Yeah.
And I knew there was something wrong. It's obviously not fine.
I know. We just want someone to tell you, like, okay.
I just need confirmation in a sense. Because my partner was like, oh, no, you're fine.
Oh, yeah.
Men. Right? So, exactly. So then I went to the hospital and the nurse looks at me and she's like, why didn't you come as soon as this happened? That is a sign of a stroke. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, looking at my partner, you should have took me to the hospital. But anyway, they did tests. It wasn't a stroke,
Thank goodness.
It was Bell's palsy. So apparently it's more common than you think during pregnancy. And I don't know what exactly happened or the cause, but it stayed up until I gave birth. So
they
told me that it could actually stay for life. They said there's no guarantee you're going to get better. And that scared me. I was
so... That is so traumatic.
Yes.
Especially being pregnant, hearing that.
Yeah. So I was quite concerned, and then they gave me an option. They said, look, we don't know for sure if steroids is going to help you, but we can try the steroids and see what happens. So I asked, is that okay for my baby in pregnancy? And they said, yes, it's usually just in the beginning of pregnancy. You shouldn't be taking steroids or something like during the development stage. So I took the steroids, and it made my baby grow quite big, in my opinion. So.
Yes.
So I had to wean off the steroids. I couldn't just like get off.
Oh, you consistently took them?
I consistently, every single day. Yes, I had to.
Oh, I thought you meant one injection or something.
No. So it was pills I had to take for 2 weeks. And so you have a higher dose and then it lowers the dose later on. Okay.
Okay.
So when I lowered the dose and everything like that, so I still had Bell's palsy, by the way. It didn't go away at this point.
Did you go out?
No, but I was super pregnant anyway.
Oh,
and I stopped
COVID.
Going to work. It was during COVID, yes.
Yeah, so you probably had like a mask on too when you went out.
Yeah, but I barely didn't go out.
Yeah.
You know, I was pregnant, huge. I gained 55 pounds with her, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just was not feeling like I want to make public appearances at that
point.
But in my pajamas, just at home watching TV all the time. So then, when I weaned off and I was getting lower doses of the steroids, ended up, my water broke the next morning as soon as I stopped the steroids. So I do think there's a relation of what happened, but I never asked for confirmation on that. So it's 37 weeks, I think 2 days.
But do you think they'd even admit it if it was?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But either way, and she was big, okay? I'm a small person. Before I was pregnant, I was about 117.
You're very small, yeah.
And then when I gave birth to her at 37 weeks and 2 days, she was almost 8 pounds.
Oh, wow.
That's huge.
That is
Can
big.
You imagine I went full term?
She'd be like 10 pounds.
Yeah,
like bigger.
She'd be massive.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so that's like a part of what is going to lead into I tore really severe, right?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
So my water broke and I was sleeping in bed. And I got up, I went to the bathroom, then I went back to bed, and I just hear, like, this pop noise. It's about 2, 3 a.m., okay?
You actually heard it.
I heard a noise. Okay. I'm like, what was that? Look down, I'm just soaked. In my bed.
Okay, wait, so and I had mine broken. So what does it feel like when you, have you had yours broken?
Yeah, the second time.
Okay, so does it feel the same?
Oh, gosh, we're talking about 4 years ago now, but it didn't feel like anything. It just kind of feels like pee trickling off of you. Okay. Warm liquid.
But you don't feel the pop, you just hear it.
I can't even explain
it. You can't explain
it. I can't explain it. I can't put it into words. And so we made it to the hospital. So we drove right away. I was shaking. My body was in shock. So I didn't feel any pain, no contractions, anything like that. Go to the hospital. I'm walking into the hospital. I tell them, oh, my water broke. I'm here to give birth. They asked, like, do you have contractions? I said, no, I don't feel anything at this point. And I was still shaking. And then they got me, like, do you want a wheelchair? Do you want to walk? I said, oh, I'll just walk. And they're like, oh, okay. So I walk up to the room that I go into, and they test to make sure it was actually fluid.
Yes.
My water breaking, and it was. So they said, okay, like, you're in labor. Do you feel anything? No, I don't feel anything. Then they hook me up to a machine, and then they were like, oh, you're having contractions. You don't feel that. Well, so weird, because then all of a sudden my brain clicked in, I'm giving birth, and I felt every single contraction. It was terrible. Yes. So it went from 0 to 100 so quickly, and I started violently puking.
Oh.
And I had eaten, because I was so hungry and I was in shock, I ate like a peanut butter bar before going to the hospital in the car.
I feel like, okay, I would do that too, because you hear these horror stories where you're like, you can only eat ice chips.
Yes. So I was so hungry. I knew I had to have a snack because I was in for a long night, right? Yeah. Because everyone tells you, oh, you're going to give birth. It's going to be a long time because it's your first time. So go to the hospital. Yeah. Violently puking up peanut butter. Okay. And very disgusting.
Yeah.
So the nurses ask, do you want pain relief? Do you want laughing gas? I'm like, okay, sure.
Oh, you guys had laughing gas.
We did have laughing gas. I used it for a split second. Was like, this is terrible. It does nothing. No, I don't want this.
Oh, it doesn't do anything?
No. So then they asked if I wanted the epidural. Well, I wanted to wait. So I told them, no, I don't want to wait then. Well, that was a terrible mistake, because then they have to call the person into the hospital because wasn't there.
I know.
And it feels forever when you're in that, right?
It feels like days.
Oh, it does. Yes. It's terrible because you're in the worst pain of your life. You've never experienced anything like childbirth.
Yes.
Or the contractions, at least.
Yes.
So then as all this is happening, they're like, oh, go take a shower to cool down and make your back feel better. Put the water spraying on your back. Okay, we tried that. It makes me puke even more. It was terrible. I didn't want anyone to touch me. So it was just, not a good experience. And then I go back to the bed and I say, I need that epidural. Get them here. Well, I waited for a long time. So eventually they came. They gave me the epidural. Everything went smoothly.
Did your epidural work?
It did. So it worked. So I'll just backtrack a little bit. The reason why I was in so much pain too, and I had no breaks in between, is I was in back labor.
I had that with my first two.
It is terrible, and I thought that was normal labor, but I found out when I had my second that that's not a normal labor. You have breaks in between. I didn't know this.
What do you mean you have breaks in between?
Your breaks in between your contractions at first, right? Like when you're timing, you have a 2-minute contraction. You have 2 minutes in between before you have another contraction.
Oh yeah, it's not like consistent. Back labor, it's okay. Yeah,
but back labor, it's just you have contraction.
Yes,
and there's no end.
Yes,
right?
Because of the position of the baby, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's so she was facing, her head was down, but it was just, her face was the wrong way.
Yeah.
So had the epidural. The epidural does work. It calms me down. I'm resting for like a few hours, whatever. Not a few hours, actually. So this is, I'll just skip ahead to 18 hours until it like gets intense. Yes.
I didn't even know you were in labor for 18 hours.
18 hours. Okay. But
that's
crazy. I was only in pain until they gave me the epidural. But it was still a few hours.
Yeah, but you can't get out of bed once you have the epidural, right?
No,
yeah,
so I was laying in bed the whole time, and it slowed down the labor.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't progressing too much, which wasn't great. But then by the time they came back in and they said, okay, you're 10 centimeters, it's time to push, I told them, now I'm starting to feel the contractions, so can you top me up for the epidural?
Did you have a button?
Yes, but they're like, no, you can't get topped up. You need to actually feel it to be able to push. And so I felt everything at that point. I'm screaming like, okay, something's wrong. Like, you know, you need to get this baby out of me. Like, I'm exhausted. I cannot push physically. Yeah. I tried to push for 2 hours and I was just so tired. They're like, no, keep going. And I can't. What is the rush? Why did the baby need to come right then? I was at 10 centimeters. Okay, the baby's going to come at some point. Wasn't in distress. There was nothing going on.
Yeah.
Like, that was like, wrong.
Just, yeah.
It's just they wanted to rush. By the time I was exhausted, I asked for a C-section. And the doctor at the time, it wasn't my OB who I was seeing, the doctor said, oh no, we're not going to do a C-section. We're going to do forceps. Yeah. That's all she said. And I trusted her.
You're like, okay.
And that's the biggest mistake of my life. So my body was in a lot of pain because I could feel everything. I wasn't topped up. She said, okay, now I'm going to cut you and then I'm going to put the forceps in and pull out the baby, basically. I'm like, okay, like, you know, get this baby out. She gave me the episiotomy and then she puts the forceps in. I'm screaming because it hurts so bad. Never been in so much pain in my life. She dropped the forceps, put her hands in the air and was like,
oh my. Yeah. Is she like a new doctor?
I don't know.
That is horrible. So,
yes. And then I look at her and I scream, get this effing baby out of me.
Well, yeah, because you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And then I had lost trust in her. So I don't know what happened next. If she put the force back in or whatever. Like, I wasn't looking down there at the point. And I panic pushed. My daughter came out very quickly. I tore very severe. They said it was third degree, but I'm pretty sure it was fourth because of the later complications that I had. I was bleeding so much and they let me hold my baby for a minute. And after that, they're like, we need to bring you to the OR for emergency surgery because you tore so severe. So then they went downstairs. I was apart from my newborn daughter. And at this point, I was in and out of consciousness. So I asked, what did you give me? I thought they had gave me more meds and they said, we didn't give you anything.
Yeah.
And so, like, I had lost so much blood.
Yeah.
And in and out of consciousness and shock.
And you're also shocked. You just also gave birth to a baby.
That I'm not holding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your body's like, what is going on?
Yeah. It was just not good. And then when they're like stitching me up, it took quite a while. I could feel everything still, but I was just so in a dreamlike state, hallucinating of like what was happening.
You're also exhausted.
And one of the things I hallucinated was so random, and I remember this because it was like, that was ridiculous. Why would I ever think that? So she's stitching me up and I'm trying to like listen to their conversation, and I thought she said I had herpes or like some other STD, which I've never had that.
And the doctors were probably like, just shh.
And the doctor's like, what? I did that. Anyway, so.
You're like so out of it, right?
I was hallucinating and I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, and you were in labor for 18 hours.
Yes, exactly.
Your body like just ran a marathon.
Never ending marathon.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, when I tore, this is very graphic, but I could feel like something hit the side of my leg.
Yeah.
I knew something was bad.
You knew something was wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I go upstairs. Baby is sleeping at that point with my partner, and I was in and out of consciousness too, and I was waking up and gasping for air as if it was like a panic attack, but it was my body in shock.
Like what's going on, where am I?
Yes.
Yeah.
Every time I close my eyes, I'd gasp.
Yeah.
It was
like, am I okay?
Terrible.
Am I alive?
And that
like,
lasted 2 weeks.
Yeah, I believe it. But then did you get support for that? Probably not.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
And then the hospital the next morning, I requested to leave because I didn't want to stay because of all the trauma that had happened.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, if you actually saw my daughter's head, I'll show you a picture of that too. She looked like Minnie Mouse and she had hematomas on her head.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yes.
And they obviously didn't tell you about it though.
No.
That could cause anything.
I didn't know that she could have issues either. So one of the things the nurses came in and told me after forceps is, this is normal after forceps. Well, my baby doesn't look normal, and this doesn't feel normal, and
there's
I
something
don't feel
wrong.
Normal.
Yeah.
Right? There's obviously something going on.
Yeah. And what is your definition of normal? Because if this is what you think is normal, there's something going on,
And I've never seen a baby look like that, right? Yeah. Like my poor daughter, her whole head was deformed.
How long did it last for?
Oh, like 4 or 5 weeks.
That's probably scary, too.
Yeah.
Being a first-time mom.
Exactly.
Having all that trauma, and then you have this trauma bond to this baby.
Yes.
You go for emergency surgery, and then you come back, and your baby doesn't look how you think your baby's gonna look, right?
Yeah. And then also the trauma bond, it was so terrible. Like, I wouldn't let anyone hold her.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't have her out of my sight, so I had to sleep with her. I co-slept with her for 6 months.
Yeah.
Would I have done that if she wasn't trauma bonded to me? I don't know. I'll never know.
Even your relationship with her now is probably affected by that, right?
It is. right? I get more anxiety surrounding her than I do my other child. I definitely had PTSD from that, and I did seek help. Yeah. And I don't know, like, it kind of helped talking about it, but it didn't heal me completely.
Did you get it on your own, though, or did you get it through the doctors?
No, I got it on my own.
That's what I mean, yeah. It shouldn't be something that women have to go out and seek themselves, pay themselves.
We don't have time.
Yeah.
Where are you finding the time? I just gave birth, had a newborn baby, and now I have to try to take care of my mental health. It's just, it's not your priority at the time.
No.
So I didn't do it right away. Yeah. Right? Like, it took me, you know, a good, I think, 6 months before I reached out for help.
Yeah. But you're probably at a breaking point almost too by then. Oh, because you're like,
I was a zombie. Yeah. I wasn't me. I was just living, I don't know, this weird life with this newborn baby. I don't know how to care for a baby. I left the hospital being like, what did I just do?
Yeah. And you're literally in shock because your body can't even process what happened because she was taken so quickly too, right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I had a lot of issues leaving her with anyone. And she was colic. And I don't know if it's from her trauma.
I honestly believe that. I believe that there's a connection.
My psychologist told me that.
Yes. If you honestly talk to so many women that have colic babies, they either had a traumatic birth, traumatic pregnancy, or traumatic postpartum, I feel like.
Yeah. And she would scream. It was called the witching hour for us.
Yeah.
And she would scream for 5 hours straight every single night. And it lasted a year.
And it's hard to go through that postpartum.
Yes. When I'm struggling to even live at this point, right? So she had the hematomas. And then she ended up getting a fever really quickly, I think in the first week of life. So we had to go to the hospital. And I was not doing well either. I was so pale. I need to show you pictures of all this. Yeah, it's terrible. Me. So I was so pale, had no color in me. And then at the hospital, they're like, okay, we should test your blood to see what your white cell count was or something like that.
Your red blood cell. Yeah.
Your red blood cell. Yeah, sorry. And they tested me and it had been a week after I'd given birth. And they said, you're still so low, should have got a transfusion.
Yes.
But I never had one.
See, right? that's what I mean. It's where does the decisions lie? How do they say they know best? But then you go after and you're like, look at what's happened.
I know. It was just not a great experience to go through. Obviously, you know, it made me into the person I am now, and I do feel stronger because of it, but I wish I didn't have to go through that.
It's something I always say, like, there's certain things in life you could have gone without.
Exactly.
Yeah. It shaped you who you are, but you could have gone without it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, so that was the start of some complications. So your cell count's going up at this point. There's no point for a transfusion because that had been a week past.
Yeah.
Right? So slowly going up, but just like get rest, drink plenty of fluids, like take care of yourself, you know, eat meat, that sort of
thing. But how do you even do all those things when you're recovering while taking care of a newborn?
I know. Right? And so I had to go to public health. This is back in Alberta, like I mentioned before. And I told her like all the issues I had and, you know, the trauma that I had. And she said, okay, I'm going to write you a note for your partner to get off work for a few weeks. So he was able to take time off work to help me recover.
Yeah.
He cooked and did all those things, which is awesome.
That is great. But also the mental aspect.
They just had a kid too.
Yes. That's right.
And it's brand new for them and they're trying to manage it all. But also I wouldn't let my baby leave from my sight.
Like it's hard. So, they can't breastfeed. They can't sleep to get you more energized. You know, there's only so much they can do, which also puts a toll on everything, right?
And you know what? Breastfeeding, I should have never done it. It's a great thing to do. And that's awesome if you can do it. But I do believe that fed is best. And I didn't get my milk in very quick because of the trauma I had giving birth to her. And we were separated really quick. And my milk was so difficult to come in. And she was so colic. I think from the trauma she's colic and just like some babies are just colic in general. But I also think she was starving in the first few weeks and I should have given her just formula. I supplemented though. So she did get the formula as well and she would chug it every single time. Yeah. So I just knew she was starving, but I was going to like wean her off and I'm going to try to give only the breast.
Yeah. And the social aspect of it is like, oh, breastfeeding's great. Like, you need to breastfeed.
Breast is best, right? And that's what I felt. And I felt the internal pressure of like, I need to do this.
Yeah.
When my body was shutting down and I should have put my energy into, you know, getting better, my mental health, first of all.
Yeah.
Right? How am I going to take care of a baby if I can't take care of myself?
Do you feel like your anxieties and your worries would ever go through breast milk?
I don't know. I've never really thought about that.
Because that's what somebody said to me actually after I had my daughter, that like when you are postpartum and you're not like rested, you're not whatever, like that's when babies can get colic because they get like
the bad energy.
Yes, you know what I mean? And like there's like this thing that's called like the 5-5-5. I don't know if it's like 5 days, 5 weeks, 5 months. I don't even know what it is. But it's like you spend 5 days in bed, 5 days on your bed, 5 days around your bed. Where it's like in some societies, they truly believe like the woman should be healing and resting opposed to like taking care of the household, taking care of the laundry, you know? That's why I asked that, because like I truly do believe if a mother's very, very healthy and well, it makes it easier for the baby to be healthier and well, you know?
Yeah, and I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
So I probably did transfer a lot of this, you know, negative energy towards her. But we both had the negative energy. Right? She's trading it. She's giving me the negative energy, giving me the colic. Transference this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just quite a time in my life. And then I went for like a checkup to see like what was going on down there.
Yeah, was that like your aha moment? Like, this is wrong? Like,
well, it was 6 weeks. You have to get it looked at anyway. Okay, I think it was six weeks. So I was supposed to go back to the doctor who delivered my baby, and I refused. I'm not going back to her. No, like, I despise her at this point, and I don't despise people usually.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to the walk-in that had followed me in the pregnancy. So I go to the walk-in, and I get checked up, and he's like, oh, yeah, everything, like, looks okay then. You'll have to wait till you're healed, whatever. And I wasn't noticing that I was having issues because you're bleeding a lot after you have give birth. You're in pain. Everything is going on and different down there in general. So then around the year mark, I was still having issues, and I was in pain all the time. And I was noticed tissue where there shouldn't have been tissue.
Yeah.
So I knew, like, something had gone wrong. I don't know what the stitching or what it was. So I went to different OB. And they said I had granulation tissue.
What's that?
Scar tissue, basically. Okay. So it like built up. It was closing me. So I couldn't have sex. I was just in pain in general. So he recommended that we do surgery to open you back up and give you like the range of movement you want. So I opted not to do it at the time because I was due back to work. I was scared of trauma happening again, opening old wounds because I still wasn't healed after a year.
And you're like, just don't touch me.
I was like, okay, we'll postpone it. And this is during COVID. So it was... You know, I said at first, okay, I want to go ahead with it. Mm-hmm. And then I was back to work, and I think it was 3 months in or something. He's like, okay, like, we have a spot and this is the day you're going. I don't want to do it anymore. So I kind of just ignored the issue. Like, I was still in pain.
Put it on the back burner.
Put on the back burner. And another thing I started noticing, though, is that gas that I would pass, I could not feel it coming on.
Yeah.
And I knew something was wrong. There must have been a tear back into the sphincter or something had happened to my anus. Ended up going to a specialist. So I kind of just brushed it off, and I just accepted, like, this is my body now, and this is kind of what I have to accept. But then when I got pregnant again, I knew I needed to see a specialist and look further into the damage that had been done. Yeah. But I had been so hesitant because it was traumatic for having people look at me down there because of how severely I tore, you know, like,
and even the trust and you had.
That the trust I had in the doctor and yeah.
Yeah, thrown at the window.
So there was a lot of things going on. But by the time, like, I went back, so I was pregnant again. And I got it looked at by a surgeon. And he said the damage is from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock. Wow. Is complete nerve damage. Like, there's no repairing it, basically. If they were to do surgery, there's no guarantee because it's nerves.
And it's nerves, but, yeah. You usually don't want to mess with nerves.
And yeah. So he said the only option really is biofeedback. And so that was an option I wanted to explore.
What's biofeedback?
I'm not entirely sure because I didn't go ahead with it, right?
Yeah, I never heard of it.
So I'll have to do more research on it because he said I couldn't do anything until I gave birth a second time because I could tear more and more damage could happen.
And you were pregnant at the time too,
And I was pregnant. Yeah. So he said we have to put everything in a halt, but when you're all done having kids, then come back and we'll assess the damage that you have again. Go from there and go to biofeedback. And then when I was pregnant with my second, this is when I really realized that there was a lot of things that were done wrong with my birth. When I had my doula, my midwife, and talking to them about all the issues that I had and things that arose, because my midwife has to do like checks on me as well. Yeah. And she noticed issue. And she's like, I have no idea what this is. And I was worried, like, is it cancerous?
Is there something going on?
What is it? She's like, I've never seen something like that. It looks like something got wrong with the stitches that were put in originally. I went to a doctor, got it looked at, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's like tissue buildup. Might go back to the granulation tissue. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I still, you know, I don't have feeling.
And well, that's what's horrible, though. Yeah. There's no support to help you figure it all out.
No, and you know what? And doctors are hard to come by, right?
Good doctors, especially.
Well, yeah, and then you throw that in there too, right? But a doctor in general, like, I moved here and I don't have a family doctor.
But even though you have to build that rapport with them, you have to explain, like, if it's just, like, bothering your quality of life, but you can still, like, do your daily tasks, they're, oh, it's fine.
I don't know. There's going to be a long road ahead that I have to still deal with and go through. I'm just so thankful for the support team I had for my second round. I did have complications, though. I had an iron level of 1. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
So they did infusions for me. And they did make me feel better, but, you know, your iron level drops, like, very quickly right after. So you have to keep getting them.
And they're long, too.
Oh, they are.
It's not like you're there for, like, 5 minutes. You're there for a while.
I think it was about an hour every time I got an infusion.
Yeah, mine was about 2 hours, but I don't know. I think it's, like, different doses.
Yeah.
They have to do, like, slow infusions, though.
Yeah. But you just watch some movies, you know, take a rest. You have a kid at home, so you're like, oh, thank God I get a little break.
Yeah, that's true.
In a sense, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went, like, with that, with my daughter, and, you know, I was quite ill with her, my second one as well, throughout the pregnancy. Having the team, like, this is when I heard about birth plans, which I was like, what is a birth plan? I had no idea that existed. Midwife that I had, she told me about different options, different complications, and went into detail about different things, which I didn't have from a doctor
before. Did you deliver with your midwife in the hospital as well?
Yeah.
Okay, because there's birthing centers here in Ontario.
Yeah, see, I was a little nervous.
Where I was, but...
Because of complications, so I wanted to make sure I was in a hospital setting.
Oh, so you could do it in a...
You could, yes. You could do it at home or, like, in a birthing pool, which sounded so amazing. And if I were to do it again, I think that I would do it at home.
Yeah, but now that you know about a great birth can be a thing.
And with my doula, like, she made me trust my body that this is what women are supposed to do.
Yes.
You know, this is, like, how your body can do it, but you need to also train your mind and your body to do these things.
So wait, with your second, do you have an epidural as well?
So for my second, I was induced.
There's different ways to be induced.
Yeah, so they didn't put the gel in. What it was is she put, like, a needle or whatever it is. Like, so she just popped it. And we were like, hey, let's see, like, how this goes.
And it got the ball rolling.
Yeah, because so she had checked me day before and I was dilated already and I had no idea. And I wanted to have more control over the situation. Yes. She said, I can induce you if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at 40 weeks anyway.
Oh,
so I said,
yeah.
So I was like, yes, please. I want to be induced because I want to have control. I want to figure out childcare because, you know, in Alberta, we have no family up there that can watch at last minute if I go into labor. So I thought it was just going to be my doula there. With my midwife, right? Which I was totally fine with.
And with your oldest.
With my oldest, like, I needed care for her, right? So the way we planned it was we'll do it during the day. So she's at daycare. As soon as she burst my water, I had contractions right away. And from start to finish, it was less than 3 hours. I was going to say 2, but I think it was less than 3 hours. So it was a very quick turnaround.
That's
good. My daughter was there for it. But she fell asleep.
Amazing.
That bed that all the men always, like, go on when it's...
Yes.
Yeah, so she fell asleep on that. And then she woke up. There was a new baby I was holding. And it was such a good birth. So I was given an epidural, but the epidural failed. The only reason I asked for an epidural is because I started to panic when I got near 10 centimeters.
I know.
So I think I was about 8 and I started to panic thinking it was going to happen to me again. What happened with my first. And I didn't want to feel the pain. I didn't want to go through tearing so severe that I have more complications.
Well, you think you can't do it.
So exactly. So I started to doubt myself. And I never should have because the epidural failed. The needle didn't go in properly like the first time. The second time I tried it and I was like, oh yeah, it seems to be working. But then only half my body.
Yeah.
And then it just failed completely, and then I had to give birth. But it was good because I could feel the pushing, and they were controlled pushes.
And you're like, this feels right. Like
And I only tore first degree.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. So not bad at all, and it was, like I said,
changed
so I gave birth, and then I had an orgasm.
See, that's amazing. But see, that's what women, I feel like, dream of when I think of birthing.
And it was peaceful, even though I had been induced. It was a controlled environment that I felt safe to give birth in, which is so important. If you don't feel
safe.
You had
your baby on you right away, right?
Exactly. And she didn't leave me. And my first experience was totally different. I didn't feel safe, didn't feel confident in the doctor's ability.
Yeah.
Right? So it was just a very different environment she was birthed into. And it was so beautiful because it was like I was at peace.
Yeah,
you
well, it's healing, though, to hear that, too.
It
like,
was.
Especially people who are pregnant or had a traumatic pregnancy or experience, and they want more kids, but they're like, oh, well, there's something better. Like, it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
And people, I think, don't think that there is another way, you know?
And I took that risk, right? Because it could very well turn out worse, or it could turn out the same. But I wanted to take the risk because I just looked at my oldest daughter now and I just knew I had to give her a sibling. To have someone to always be with and grow up with and have like a built-in best friend.
Yeah, right? Well, and it healed parts of you though, right?
And so. It did, and she's such a great addition, and it was so healing. And I just hope that people who are listening in know that even if you go through this trauma and through these traumatic experiences, that there can be light at the end of it. And you can still have a positive experience. You learn from what you went through. Yes, right? So I learned my lesson, and I just hope no one else has to go through the same thing I did.
Yeah.
It's important to have birth plans. Even if you have a birth plan, it has to be flexible. You have to be flexible with it. You can't just say, this is the only way I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
There's complications. There's other things that go on with it. There are some things that are just out of your control, unfortunately. But it'd be nice to have control over the things you can.
Yes.
So not only just a birth plan, but start thinking and training your body like, okay, I can do this, and believe it. When I was giving birth my second and I was in the most pain ever because I felt everything, I told myself, I was born to do this. I can do this. I can do this. I can. And I repeated it, and it was affirmations that I know I can get through it. I know I can do it. And then when it happened and it was all done, I just looked at my beautiful girl. I did it. I'm so proud of myself.
Yes.
And it was beautiful.
Well, I'm glad your second one was so healing.
Wow, I know. Yeah, me too.
Like, seriously, right? Though, because, like, think about it. Imagine you had the first pregnancy, whatever. You had all these complications. But then the second time, you were like, you didn't think about going for a midwife. You just thought, okay, well, this is just how birthing is. This is just how people have babies. And you did it all over again. And then, God forbid, something bad happened that was even worse that you couldn't come back from, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would just completely alter your perspective. And then, you know, like, that's where the conversation I think needs to continue, because so many people think there's just no other option.
Oh, I completely agree with you.
Before I met you, I never met somebody who openly stated about forceps.
Yeah.
I've never even really heard that term being used when people describe, oh, I had a bad birth. I don't really know what it is, but like, people just don't share their story.
Yeah. I don't know. And hopefully that changes now.
Yes, sharing, I hope it does. I truly hope it does bring light to all that.
So one thing I do want to add, though, about the forceps situation. Afterwards, I obviously researched about forceps. Like when I was, you know, pregnant again, this is when I started doing more research. Forceps, so it is archaic. They're not recommended to use forceps. Higher risk of you tearing, and you're getting episiotomies, which now in research, episiotomies are not a good thing to get.
No.
So not only did I get an episiotomy, it still hurts to this day.
Yeah.
And even when I get periods, it's so painful and it swells where they had cut me, but you're just at high risk to tear.
Yeah.
Right? It's more severe. And that's exactly what happened to me. You know, obviously sometimes it's unavoidable, but it's nice just going in knowing that if you have to use this, these are things that could happen.
Yeah.
Right? And be aware of
them. When they told you we're going to use forceps, they didn't say, oh, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. They're just like, we're going to do it. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. Blindly trusting. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's the gist of my story. I'm sure I missed a whole bunch of different parts, but it's late. Sure. So
well, yeah, these podcasts basically be filmed when our kids are asleep at night, and
because we're so busy,
the house
right?
is asleep. Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, it's hard to do anything with kids when they're awake.
I know.
Even when you like try to keep them busy and stuff, they just want you.
Yeah. But yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Birth, Babies, and Busy Moms.
Thanks for listening to my mommies, and I really love you so much.